said that when the Chinese take to Krishna consciousness, they will take to it extremely seriously. Everybody knows that. Are we back on now? We're way past, aren't we? Okay, my dear friends, let's begin again. What is most important? Oxygen or your lungs? I'll move around. What is most important? Oxygen or your lungs? Think about it. Which is number one, which is number two? Tell me.
Oxygen.
Oxygen. Why?
Because even if your lungs aren't working, somebody else's lungs are working, so the oxygen will work.
Okay. Anybody disagree with that? You all agree with that?
Can it be both?
Yeah, that's the third option. Oxygen. How long can you live without eating?
40 days.
40 days, okay. Jesus did it 40 days. How long can you live without drinking water?
A week.
How long can you live without breathing? Give me the exceptions to the rule. He's already given me an exception to the rule and spoiled the conclusion. The maximum is 7 minutes. They say 7 minutes without air. And the vital component of air, of course, is oxygen. Now, the way that you access the oxygen is the lungs. If you don't have lungs, you can't access the oxygen. You really do need lungs. And believe it or not, that's why Krishna gives every living being lungs. They're just two bags, but they extract oxygen from a mixture which we know as air, a gaseous mixture known as air. So they're very, very sophisticated. They're not just bags. Extremely important. At the same time, if you have lungs, and we're talking about what is more important, oxygen or the lungs. That's what we're talking about. So at the same time, if you have your lungs and they're working perfectly, but there ain't no oxygen, you will die. If there's oxygen everywhere, but you don't have any lungs, you die. But you're saying both are important. And of course, that's, you probably guessed that that's the conclusion I wanted you to go to. There is a hierarchy, of course. Oxygen, as Ram says, is slightly more important than the lungs because there are artificial ways that it can be placed within your bloodstream. But when we talk of the Krishna consciousness movement, and when we talk of Krishna consciousness, I just want you to think of the Krishna consciousness movement as the lungs, and Krishna consciousness as the oxygen. Krishna consciousness is the spiritual oxygen that we need for spiritual life. Anything that you do for Krishna consciousness makes you Krishna conscious. That's the whole point. But the vehicle with which that is delivered, by which that is delivered, is the Krishna consciousness system, the Krishna consciousness structure. And it allows you to live in such a way as to extract the Krishna consciousness better from the world around you. That's what the Krishna consciousness movement does. Krishna consciousness is everywhere. It's like oxygen. It exists everywhere. Krishna is everywhere. Therefore, consciousness of Krishna is also everywhere. But the Krishna consciousness movement provides you the wherewithal to extract it from any given situation. Why? By giving you association. sadhus, by giving you deities, by giving you prasadam, by giving you ritual, by giving you language, by giving you song, by giving you customs. All these things contribute. And it's really, the more you do, the more you get. You know, we have a lot of people who say, well, if I chant but I don't read, is that okay? If I read but I don't chant, is that okay? And I say, yes, it's okay, but there is a way that you can extract the maximum amount of Krishna consciousness. It's like a person saying, well, you know, if I only have one lung working, is that okay? And the doctor says, yeah, that's okay. You can get by on one lung. You can get by on one kidney. You can get by on one eye. You can get by on one hemisphere of your brain. But there's a reason why you have two. There's a reason why you have two lungs. There's a reason why you have two kidneys. Because it works better that way. So if you read and chant and get up early and do all the things that the spiritual master has directed, then you can extract the maximum amount of Krishna consciousness in your life and you will be Krishna conscious. Now, when we say the movement for Krishna consciousness, we mean two things. It's a place where I can become more Krishna conscious, but it ain't just for you. And if you have a t-shirt that you must wear in life, and especially in this movement, there is one t-shirt. And it should have Prabhupada on the front and on the back of the t-shirt. They don't make them, but they should make them. On the back of the t-shirt, it should say, it's not about me. This should be a meditation for us. That this movement is not about me and what I want. You get what you want. It's called Dhruva Darshana Nyaya. Dhruva Darshana Nyaya. Nyaya means logic. And Dhruva Darshan means, it's what we do at the end of weddings. When you get married, the new husband is supposed to show his wife the pole star, Dhruva Loka. And if you do weddings the way they do them in India, it will be dark by the time you finish the wedding. It only happens once in your life, so why not, you know, spend 9-10 hours doing it, you know. We spend how many hours in our sadhana every day? When you think about it, from Mangal Aarti through till, you know. They've changed it here, haven't they? Yeah. I'm going to go back to England, I'm going to say, do you know what's happening? And in Radhadesh, they get up at 6 and they have Mangal Aarti at 8 and they have prasadam 5 times a day. They changed everything that Prabhupada wanted us to. So, really, Dhruva Darshan means, and sometimes when you're pointing out the pole star to someone, you don't exactly point out the star because, you know, it's difficult to see a particular star when you look straight at it. So what you do is you point to a branch of a tree, and you point to the branch of a tree, and then you can find the star. And it's quite curious. So ISKCON is an organization for people who really wanted to get away from organizations. ISKCON is an institutionalized religion for people who just wanted to get away from institutionalized religion. Why do I say it's an institutionalized religion? Because Prabhupada used the word. Institution just means that which is instituted. Just means that which is firmly established. And what did Prabhupada say? Please keep this institution, cooperate to keep this institution together after I'm gone, like that. So institution is not a bad word, just like lungs are not bad, even though you want the oxygen, but don't forget your lungs, please. People want oxygen, but then they smoke cigarettes, and they practically start the business of killing their lungs. I want the oxygen, but I'm killing my lungs at the same time. It doesn't make sense. So a strong institution for people who want to be Krishna conscious, and a strong institution for people who want to give Krishna consciousness to others, can only help both the practitioners and those who are going to be on the receiving end. And really, that's what ISKCON was kind of set up to do. So I'm going to pass these out to you. And I'm giving you all the sheets for the 3 days, all in one go. Normally I wouldn't do this because you end up reading them, but I don't need to read all of them. But you'll see the picture of the tree, and it's the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. I think that's such a cool name, Ming-Ting. That's such a cool name. And if I had a name like that, I wouldn't get initiated. I'd just keep that name. Okay. So, this is not the gospel, the absolute truth. It doesn't come from Prabhupada, but it comes from Kripa Moya Das. So go with me. The root of the tree, please people, if you look at the root of the tree. I drew this tree. Yeah, thank you. I'm okay, you know. I'm a bit artistic. The root of the tree is, normally when we do hierarchies, institutional hierarchies, we normally do the person at the top, don't we? This is another one. This is a tree. And this is the roots of the tree. This is also a Vedic thing. The root of the tree that gives all the energy, the life-giving oxygen, if you like, to the whole thing is Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you were to see the roots of the tree, you'd see, you know, the Vedas, Krishna, Lord Brahma, everything like that. But I'm just concentrating above ground. The trunk of the tree is the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, nothing too controversial there. The international Vaishnav community. Okay, now we go into the different branches, different temples and ashrams, the different branches. Regular groups of committed devotees. There's more of them than there are of temples and ashrams, actually. Then meetings in homes are the smaller branches. And then the practicing individuals, each individual is a leaf. And the leaf, let me tell you, is a very important part. In fact, it's the most important part of the tree, in the sense that there's a direct relationship between the leaf at the top of the tree and the rest of the tree. Why? Because the leaf is where photosynthesis takes place. It's where sunlight is captured by the leaf and oxygen is extracted and it's processed and sent down, and then the juice and the sugars and the nourishment is sent, and the water is sent from the trunk back up to the leaves. In this way, it's a whole system. It's a complete system. So those people who think that ISKCON ends with the upper branches, people, there's no photosynthesis going on. And we really, really do need that. Because all around ISKCON at the moment, there's a crisis. And the crisis is, we don't have enough money to build the temple in Mayapur. We don't have enough money to pay off the Turley court case. We don't have enough money to fix the temple roof. We don't have enough money to start a branch of the, Bhaktivedanta College in our country. We don't have enough money to pay our BBT bills. How many times have you heard temples saying, we don't have enough, we don't have enough, we don't have enough? I say that those temples are cutting themselves off needlessly from the most important part of ISKCON, which is the individual leaves of the Chaitanya tree. And unless the upper, smaller branches are all connected to the leaves of the tree, then they don't do their job, because they're not getting any nourishment from you, and you won't be getting any nourishment from them. So it's a cycle. So that's why I say that this is important. So let's turn the page. Is everybody all right with that? Did I do all right in my extended metaphor?
Just to find a logical thing, that they don't take oxygen, they actually take carbon dioxide, and they give out oxygen. And part of your analogy, you know, where you're speaking,
what do they take in?
They take in carbon dioxide.
They take in carbon dioxide and they give out oxygen. Okay. But a tree can't do without the leaves, right? Okay. So I was trying to use my oxygen and lungs analogy and move that seamlessly into the tree analogy. But when you're using analogies, Prabhupada said you have to use not only the right analogy, but you know it's the right analogy if there are points of comparison which actually match up. So what she says is absolutely correct. She is correct. And I stand corrected. Now, the leaves, they take in sunlight. That's the thing. And it's the sunlight that's being processed into sugar. Am I right? Through the agency of chlorophyll. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Okay. And those sugars, they go down the trunk. And what comes up the trunk? Water. Is that right? I'm looking to you here for the biology.
Yes.
It was a long time ago that I did biology. I did do it. Gave it up halfway through to become a monk. All right. You've seen it all before. I had a phone conversation with Mukunda Maharaj, who is now 66, who came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1966. He's one of our oldest devotees. And I said to him, this was a few weeks ago, I said, Maharaj, who wrote this? And he said, Prabhupada wrote it. He said, but Hayagriva may have edited it. There's seven purposes. Anyway, these are the things that Prabhupada wanted. But this is a condensed version of the version that was initially there, which was many, many purposes in Prabhupada's original, which I'll also read out. Can you kindly please read one each, starting from Heimlich, Lalita?
To systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world.
Sheena?
Cultivate a consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam.
Win the members of the society together with each other and in order to Krishna, the prime indeed. Thus, the quality, the idea between members and humanity at large, that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of the God, Krishna.
That's it, right? Only seven. Okay. Well, let me tell you that when Prabhupada first wrote it, there was more than seven. And it goes something like this. This is just nothing that you have to write down, but it's just, you may have seen this before. So he says, and it's interesting what he's talking about, to say, it starts off, A, to educate human society in the techniques of spiritual life, as the basis for a balanced psychic and biological development, and thereby achieve for the first time in human society a real peace and unity among the contending forces in the world today. So this is Prabhupada writing. Then, so that's generic spirituality. Then specific, listen to this. To propagate, this is just for fun, to propagate the sense of Godhead, the all-attractive personality of primal and eternal form, as he himself revealed in his own words in the Bhagavad Gita, the holy scripture of the Lord Sri Krishna, the Godhead. Then, okay, so you get what's happening. It's following the same pattern so far. It's just, this was the edited version, seven purposes. So, with spiritual techniques, we're going to rebalance the world. That's the main thing. If we don't do anything, if we don't teach specific Krishna consciousness, at least we can help people spiritually. There's a big spiritual vacuum. Then we're going to teach people about Krishna. Then Prabhupada says, to bring together individuals in a society, regardless of nationality and irrespective of creed or caste, in order to develop a nearness to the Godhead, and thereby the idea that within the members and humanity at large, there is an infinitesimal soul spirit that is part and parcel in quality with the Godhead, and that all life is meant for the satisfaction of the said Godhead, the Supreme Soul. Interesting, huh? Then he says, to encourage the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then, to prove by active work and preaching that Lord Sri Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the outcomes of individual and collective sacrifice, penance, meditation, arts, culture, science, because he is the supreme proprietor of the whole universe, eternally a part of him, everyone knows him as a friend. Real peace can be attained when this is realized in fact. Then F. Are you okay with me reading these out? It's just to assist whenever, and this is Prabhupada's original intentions, to assist whenever and wherever possible in the building of a social structure on the real foundation of spiritual progress and establishment of peace and unity between men throughout the world. Then he talks about diksha as a way to save people. Then he talks about teachings according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis. Then he goes on to the next part. To have for its objectives, amongst the others, four principles which the Goswamis had in view. They are the following. To erect a holy place of transcendental pastimes, as well as a place where members of Lord Sri Krishna can flourish. In order to accomplish this, to adopt proselytizing methods of peaceful means and to establish a broader society of association for all members, including scholars and admirers, to engage in this service as put forth in the Srimad Bhagavatam. To install, wherever it is possible, the worship and temple of Radha Krishna and that of Sri Chaitanya, and to give facility to everyone to become trained in the modes of archana, or preparatory principles of devotional service. Interesting, he calls archana preparatory principles of devotional service. To introduce to the members of society and humanity at large a simpler and more natural purpose in life by means suitable to the particular place and time as enjoined in the Bhagavad Gita. Educational programs such as classes and lecture tours, and to institute services such as mailing for the benefit of the society and humanity at large. L, to publish periodicals, books, and pamphlets in all important languages in order to reach human society. M, to invoke the quality of goodness individually by the process of diksha and by establishing one in the status of a Brahmin on the basis of truthfulness, knowledge, and faith, etc. Then it goes on to Varnashram, to get rid of the idea of one man being supreme over others. Then he says here, to popularize the vegetable grain diet under approved methods in order that full value of protein, carbohydrate, fat and vitamin benefit may be derived therefrom. This is one of the purposes of ISKCON. 4, to discourage intoxicating or addicting habits of all descriptions and dimensions and to expose such persons thus afflicted to approved methods of spiritual realization. So, one of the purposes that ISKCON was set up for is to rescue drunks and drug addicts from their bad habits by introducing them to spiritual life. And then it's signed, and such, etc. So, I just thought I'd read those out because we don't often get to hear those. Alright, can I ask you just to have a look at these three stones on this plate? Very careful. And pass them around. pass the plate around. And there is a method. There is a reason. Where could these stones be from? Are they holy? Are they sacred? One is black. One is orange. One is cream. Mysterious stones. Okay. My dear friends, these stones are very holy. They come from the Holy Land. They actually come from... have you heard of a Jewish preacher known as Jesus? This comes from the beach on the Sea of Galilee. You know what happened there? Jesus walked on water. Very holy. This comes from Jerusalem. This comes from Jerusalem, where Jesus was tried and finally put to death on a cross. And this comes from Golan, very near to the place where Jesus turned wine into water. I'm doing it again, Sheena. You've got to catch me. Water into wine. So one is black, one is orange, and one is cream. So what's going on? What point is creeping? What are you trying to prove? I'm trying to prove the point that when Jesus was preaching, there was one place where he was preaching to his followers where all three colors were present in the same place. Now, he pointed on the ground, and some of it, this in the place where he was preaching, was good for growing things. This was a little bit okay for growing things when it was sand, you know, sandy. You know, these are rocks, so when it was sand, this wasn't very good for growing things. So, that was the place where all those rocks were together, where Jesus told the story of the man who cast seed. And although it was the same seed, he threw some seed in one place and it didn't grow. He threw seed in another place and it kind of grew, but it was very weak. And he threw seed in another place and it grew very strongly. And Jesus used this as an analogy, that when you go out to preach, you cast seed, and you don't know where it's going to sprout. Our analogy for this is a spark coming from a fire. Wet grass, dry grass. A spark stands much more chance on dry grass than it does on wet grass. So these analogies are given. The word broadcast now means to send something out on the radio or television. But originally, broadcast meant when you had a basket of seeds, you put your hand in and you just threw them across the field. And you would walk along and you would just broadcast the seed. Some of it would grow, some of it would get eaten by birds, and some of it would grow, but it would grow weak. This is broadcasting. Now, when we talk of preaching, I just want to say that preaching is a broad spectrum of different techniques, and we're going to talk about that, you know, later on. So we're on again at 3:30. But what I want to say before we end here is that there's a big difference between broadcasting, which means basically chucking out the holy name to wherever it will go, chucking out books on book distribution to wherever it will go, chucking a Rathiatra out, you know, so that whoever's there gets something. And they're all preaching, but preaching is also when I'm doing one-to-one and I'm speaking to someone and I'm working on that person's attachments. That's also preaching. in ISKCON we tend to get done in by our own generic terms. We don't use proper words. We use often words that we think should match the situation. So a devotee who goes for Harinam, I'm going out preaching. A person who does a college program is preaching. A person who sells books is preaching. You know, and then you hear the devotees in the temple say, well, deity worship is preaching. Prabhupada said so. Cleaning the temple is preaching. Everything is preaching, because we're a preaching movement. And that tends to get rid of the distinctions. Now, I have to be very careful, because one time, 1976, in our London temple, I, without the temple president knowing, I held a meeting, and I asked all the pujaris to come, and I said, what you've got to understand is that although you're doing pujari work, Prabhupada would really like it if you went out and distribute books. You see. And so, actually, I was a little persuasive, and I managed to get them out the door. But then, I started complaining when they didn't come out on the third day. They came out for a couple of days. And then I started complaining that they didn't. And the temple president said to me, do you not think that you should have asked the temple president before you held a meeting with him, you know, because that's what I do. You're the Sankirtan leader. I said, no, Sankirtan is what Prabhupada wants, you know. He wants everybody to go out on Sankirtan. So then Prabhupada came to the temple. Prabhupada came to the temple, and he gave a talk. And he looked at all of us and he said, so, all services are equally satisfactory to Krishna. One person is doing pujari work. Another person is doing book distribution. They are all trying to please Krishna. So he spoke in that way. Now, when we're talking about preaching, we do have to be very specific. It's not that we say that preaching is superior, but what we must say is that if everything is preaching, but no one's going preaching, then we've got a problem. If someone's cleaning the floor and considers that to be preaching, someone's doing puja and considers that to be preaching, someone's doing administration and that's also preaching because we're a preaching movement, but no one is actually getting out the door to speak to people who don't know anything about Krishna. So in its essence, we're a preaching movement where no one's actually doing what the movement is. Then also we have problems. So not too much on one side, and not too much on the other side. And when it comes to preaching, because prasadam distribution is preaching, harinam is preaching, rathyatra is preaching, other festivals preaching, there's college preaching, there's book distribution, there's mail order preaching, there's a lot of different things. But when we talk of congregational development, we have to be aware that there's a system and there's a broad spectrum of things that we term as preaching. And therefore we have to use them in a particular order in order to get the result. That's all. Will you give me 3 more minutes just to read these definitions? Yeah? Let's see if I can go through this one. Here's the next page, some definitions. All right. What is an ISKCON member? Those becoming educated in and practicing Srila Prabhupada's teachings. 2, those who fund the society's activities or volunteer their time, words, or resources. 3, those who identify or sympathize with the society's aims and objectives, and who acknowledge and agree that their membership is bound by its spiritual and administrative systems and structure. That's an ISKCON member. You can't make it up, and you can't do what you like with Prabhupada's movement. In other words, both of these things. You can't tamper with the systems and structure that was set up by him, and you can't tamper with the philosophy that was taught by him. But all those people are members of ISKCON. Further definitions. And these are my definitions, so feel free to... Those who are financially dependent on the institution are known as resident members. Those who are financially independent from ISKCON are known as congregation members. Those who were formerly resident members are known as the ISKCON community. They may be called different things in different countries, but this is just, Jayapataka Maharaj once told me, he said, I think we should call those who used to live in the temple, he said, ISKCON seniors or ISKCON elders, you know, the community of elders. You know, and congregation members means anyone who does not rely on the temple for their food and shelter, which is most people. What does congregational development mean? We're running towards the end now. That individual members of our congregation develop in their knowledge, understanding, and application of our philosophy, culture, and practice. Okay, so it means that individuals are moving forward in their understanding and application. Number two, that individual members develop their tendency to share what they've learned with others and in their care and spiritual leadership of others. Number three, so we go beyond the individual now, that groups of members are formed in each locality and collectively take responsibility to help each other in spiritual life. Okay? So the individuals moving forward, individuals sharing what they've got with others, then groups of individuals helping each other, then groups of members sharing. Number four, groups of members developing their ability to systematically propagate Krishna consciousness. So I do it as an individual, I do it as a group. I help other people individually, I help other people in a group. It's quite simple. Five, that members become empowered and trusted to take responsibility for the funding and practical management of many of ISKCON's basic activities and projects. Not that we have a bunch of grey-haired old men and women looking after our temples, and all the young people, you know, they're never given a chance. People do complain like that. Because when we were temple presidents and Sankirtan leaders, I was a Sankirtan leader when I was 19. Now, a 19-year-old person doesn't get a look in to ISKCON's structure and system. I don't know. Maybe they do in some countries, but... Number six, that ISKCON develops its ministers, systems, structures and resources to care adequately for the spiritual lives of its members and groups. In other words, let's look after the kids that we've created. Making a baby is really easy for a man. It takes a few seconds, and it's fun. Looking after a baby until that baby is fully grown to the point where that person can make a baby for themselves, that takes a good number of years and an awful lot of money. On average, it takes about, in England at least, it takes £160,000 to raise one child. And then if you've got more than one child, you know. But the point here is that making a devotee, if you'll pardon the graphic example, everybody, but making a devotee takes one conversation or a couple of conversations or one gulab or, you know, a string of gulabs or, you know, a few visits to the temple, however you became a devotee. If you look at it as a speeded up movie, if you see your life as a speeded up movie and how you became a devotee, it took a very small part of your life. Maintaining yourself as a devotee takes the rest of your life. So a lot of what ISKCON does is about starting people off as devotees, but a lot of what it does, and actually most of what it does, is keeping them that way. And if ISKCON isn't geared up to look after people once they've said, I want to be a devotee of Krishna, then ISKCON isn't geared up to doing what it was, you know, what Prabhupada has just been talking about. The easy to become a devotee, very, very easy to fall away from being a devotee. The hard thing is to keep a person as a devotee, to help them, encourage them, correct them, guide them, illuminate them, instruct them, all that sort of thing. So it's hard for ISKCON to do that. It requires greater tolerance and it requires greater organization. So a lot of what I'm going to be talking about in congregational development is not starting people off in Krishna consciousness, but keeping them that way. So finally, even though you're keeping them that way, number seven, that ISKCON continues to attract new congregational members. So even while you're doing that, you've got to make sure that the movement isn't just a movement for looking after the practitioners within the movement. You can never stop bringing more people in. Why? Because the movement's got to grow. Statistically, we do lose people unless you're bringing in people to replace the ones that you've lost. You know, you will not survive. So I thank you very, very much. I'm not going to take any questions now, but afterwards we can do that. And I lied to you. I said I would finish at 12:30. It's now 12:43. And I've taken 13 extra minutes of your valuable human form of life. So I thank you very much. God bless you all. And I will see you back here at... $3.35. I'll pay you back in installments. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Is it the big torture?
Sorry?
Is it the big torture?
What?
This thing.
No, it's fine.